This week we've heard several callers making all sorts of wild and totally unsubstantiated claims about what happened on September 11, 2001, even though a terrorist group Al-Qaeda claimed responsibility a long time ago. But there's still talk about it. Many of us remember where we were when we saw that live broadcast of a couple of planes going into the Twin Towers in New York, killing nearly 3,000 people, injuring about 25,000 more. It was a hell of a mess. Out of respect to those people, it's important to debunk the myths that surround that tragic day. And let me tell you, there are plenty of myths surrounding that day. One man who spent literally decades trying to studying large structures, studying what should have happened and studying what can happen when they're subjected to extreme conditions, including fire and blast, is the man who is in the studio with me at the moment. His name is Professor Mark Bradford from the UNSW School of Civil Engineering. So he ought to know what he's talking about. Professor Mark Bradford, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. Good to be here, and good morning, listeners, as well.
Well, it's nice to have you here because a lot about this we don't understand, and a lot is being talked about that is arrant nonsense, and it just goes on and on and on. Do you remember where you were when you first found out about this thing happening?
I do remember where I was. I woke up and actually didn't observe it, and it was when ANSET was going down, and they were talking about flights being changed, and I thought, oh, you know, ANSET is going bust at that time. It's 21, and suddenly when the news came on and I turned the TV on, I was totally flabbergasted to see what had happened. So I didn't see it in real time, but of course I've watched many videos since.
Have you been to Ground Zero?
I haven't. I've been to New York since, but I haven't been to Ground Zero.
I don't know that there's a lot to see, is there?
Well, there's all been reconstructed there now. There's towers close by. The World Trade Center is back there again.
A lot of people ask, a lot of people who are conspiratorialists are asking, how can the buildings collapse in a way that seemed to be a controlled manner? Why did they collapse in that way?
Well, the fire weakened the area where the fire was. So you can imagine that where the fire is located, probably 10,000 gallons of fuel were in those aircraft when they came in, and they were deliberately targeted on the East Coast because they were flying to the West Coast, and of course they were full of fuel. I made sure they had the maximum amount, so the fire was absolutely intense, and essentially it just weakened those fire areas so much that the columns buckled. If your listeners have a plastic ruler on their desk and they hold it vertically and try and push it down and just give it a little bit of a push to the side, you can see that it buckles and it loses all of its strength. And so the fire allowed the steel beams to expand and push against those very slender columns. Those columns were very small in cross-section. And when the beams heated up with that enormous fire, and of course the impact took the fire protection off the steel beams as well, so they had no resistance or time resistance, so they went down very fast. But they pushed the flexible columns out of straightness. Now, some of them may have pulled them back in again as the beam started to sag, but essentially the columns buckled in that area. And once the columns buckled there, there's no resistance to hold all of the load that's above that region. And so essentially it's just like taking it out and it comes down like a pack of cards. And the impact continued through. And there's stories about that normally a structure like that would say what the path of least resistance, but it just goes with gravity. It just goes straight to the gravity points towards the centre of the Earth, and it just goes straight down vertically. And in fact, the tower that was hit second was hit lower than the tower that was hit first. So the South Tower was hit lower, and of course it had more weight to support above that fire area than the first tower, the North Tower, because it was hit reasonably high. And that's why the second tower collapsed substantially a shorter period than the first tower, even though it was hit second.
Okay, because of where it was hit.
Yeah, because it was hit low. So that area that was burning had to support a hell of a lot of weight above it, because it had, you know, probably 50, 60 stories above it, whereas the first tower, when it came in higher, it probably had about 30 stories that it had above it, so the weight wasn't as much.
It was a hell of a mess, whatever it was.
It was a hell of a mess, and when, in fact, it was the cause of the collapse or partial collapse of all of the towers. They're one of the ones that they try to say is problematic in terms of the conspiracy theory is the Tower 7, which was 47 stories. It didn't suffer any impact, and they tried to say that that was controlled demolition. But the same thing happened when the North Tower collapsed, which was 100 metres away. You can imagine the amount of debris and the fire that spread into that Tower 7, which was 47 stories. So that just started a fire alone, but the fire wasn't contained because it got hit so badly on numerous floors because of the flying debris from the big tower. And so you had a very, very large fire in there, and essentially the same thing happened. It caused buckling and failure of the connections, and it came down in the same way. And that's the only steel tower that has collapsed, or steel skyscraper that's collapsed due to fire alone.
Your analogy of the plastic ruler is a good one. Because when you push down on the plastic ruler, once it starts to bend, then it's
And it's exacerbated by being pushed out of plumb.
Yeah.
And it's being pushed out of plumb because the steel beams that are connected to the central core within the floor, they'll push that as well. And they wanted to maximise the amount of floor space, so they didn't have any internal columns. So these beams were very, very stiff, so you didn't have to have columns in the middle, so you didn't waste your rented space. So the force that they exerted due to that fire, up to 1,000 degrees, it's about the petroleum fire's about 1,000 degrees, and so the theory is about the melting of steel is wrong because that melts at 1,300. But it's that deformation, which you can see, of those and out of straightness of those columns, really led to their collapse. And notwithstanding that, of course, the stiffness of the columns, what we call the Young's modulus, the stiffness of the columns decreases in temperature.
I see.
So they're much more susceptible to buckling as they get hot anyway.
Well, they would be.
Yeah, getting up to 1,000 degrees, yes, you lose an awful lot of stiffness when it gets to that level.
Pretty warm. The most quoted conspiracy theory is that jet fuel cannot melt steel beams. Is that true?
That's true. I think I said that because petroleum fuel burns at about 1,000 degrees and steel melts at 1,300. So it's not a melting. There was no melting whatsoever. And they tried to say that there was molten steel there, but I haven't seen it. It was essentially just a buckling failure. Steel is terrible in fire. That's why you have to provide fire protection on steel, because it expands, and particularly it buckles very easily because steel sections, their cross sections are very small because steel's very strong. So to be economical, you reduce the size of the cross section. Whereas another one I think you've probably had is Grenfell Tower didn't collapse because Grenfell Tower was made of reinforced concrete. It was very, very stocky cross-sections, big, heavy cross-sections, so that's why that didn't fail.
It's interesting, really, when you stop and start to analyse it. As I said, the most quoted conspiracy theory is that jet fuel cannot melt steel beams, and you say that is right.
Yeah, there was no melting, it was buckling. Yeah. That fuel won't melt steel.
Yeah. Again, your analogy of the ruler is a good one because you can see once it starts to go out, it loses its strength.
Yeah, that's a buckling phenomenon you have in steel. Steel is quite hard to design in because that's the killer in steel. It's fantastic when you try and stretch it. If you get the ruler and stretch it, it's really good. But if you try and compress it, it's terrible. Compression's terrible.
Why do you think people are so obsessed with trying to make up conspiracy theories about this thing?
I think you'd have to ask a psychologist. I think people are people, John. they make up conspiracy theories about everything.
Oh, they do?
They do, I know. There's conspiracy theories about anthropogenic climate change being driven by left-wing intellectuals and that sort of stuff. It's, you know, we get this in my business all the time. But something is profound as that. And also, when you come to think of it, it had fairly profound political ramifications. It was a political act to start with. And so, you know, people have all sorts of ideas about, you know, what may or may not happen. And they also probably have very fertile imaginations too.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of those around, believe me. Mark, it's good of you to come in and talk to us, and I appreciate it very much. I'd like the sound of the... UNSW, the New South Wales School of Civil Engineering. Is that a specific school?
Is that it's within the Faculty of Engineering. We specialise in structural engineering. In fact, it's civil and environmental now. Everybody has that. But we specialise in teaching students how to design structures. We do a lot of research. We do research in fire engineering. You know, we just don't teach students. At good universities like UNSW, they're research intensive universities on a world scale. So we do a lot of research and publish the research in peer-reviewed journals and present it at conferences and get it out into the broader domain. And we're involved with writing standards, so the fire rules in the steel structures code that we would use in Australia come from research like that.
I am fascinated when I go to Hong Kong, China, to see that they use bamboo.
Yes.
As scaffolding.
Yes.
So is bamboo as strong as steel?
It's reasonably strong because it's got the same function, if you like, that the steel tubes are in compression and they're much weaker than if they're in tension, so the bamboo holds up quite well. In fact, in my career, I think I've examined two PhDs on designing in bamboo. It's also very common in Central and South America too.
Yeah, so obviously it does the job.
It does the job. I don't think they've had collapses, but you know, we've had collapses of scaffolding as well, not bamboo. But.
No, we haven't gone the bamboo route yet. It's very good of you to come in. It's a fascinating story. You could talk about it all day. And obviously you have to, doing what you're doing. You're a professor in the area.
It is fascinating. If I can share just one story with you about this and about the conspiracy theories too. I did a program it was for the university, but it was sold to the Guardian newspaper in the UK. And it had a video of my explaining exactly what had happened. And there was a guy in the UK emailed me and saw it, and he copied the university and said, oh, my brother was in the Twin Towers when it collapsed. And he said, what was the cause? I thought, that's fairly strange, because I've just explained it in the video. And the university got back and said, you know, can you reply to this guy? And I was actually in Naples at the time. And so when I was early in the morning before breakfast, it was Sydney time, it was in the afternoon, I just happened to notice that he'd copied it into someone who had a sort of dubious-sounding name. I won't go any further than that, but I Googled this dubious-sounding name, and he was sort of on the terror list, if you like, in Brussels. So I got back to the university and said, look, I'm not a bit uncomfortable about doing this, and they said, well, don't do anything. So I was a bit shaken by it. So I went down to have breakfast then, and I was in the hotel, and I pressed the button on the lift to get the lift down to breakfast, and the hotel room next to it, the door, and in big letters, it was room 911. That sent a bit of a shiver up my spine, I can attend. John, I don't know whether that's coincidental, but these things happen. I think everyone's experienced them, haven't they?
It sent a shiver up my spine too. That I mean, that is a hell of a coincidence, isn't it?
It was unbelievable, yeah. And they were in big letters too, so I wasn't going to miss it.
Mark, thank you very much for coming in. It's been interesting to talk to you. As I say, we could talk about the subject all day, and so many people want to. You know, after all these years, it's still a major topic for discussion all the time.
Yeah. Well, I hope that's sort of debunked all of these silly theories now, John, because they just don't pack any weight. And a lot of them, it's false news, as you probably know, because they say some of the... I've read these. I mean, they say that engineers have said X, Y and Z, and they haven't. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and so people tell lies.
They tell lies, yeah. They tell lies, and they say then this has been proven. You say, where's it been proven?
Yeah, they can't tell
they
you.
They can't tell you, other than it sounds good.
Mark Bradford, I appreciate your coming in to visit, and I hope we get to talk to each other again. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Yeah,